Welcome to the One Hour Poems podcast, the only poetry podcast not steeped in pretension. I'm your host, Jake. Making beef jerky for the jerk-off. The jerk-off competition that's at the bar that I work at once a year. So the fun thing about beef jerky is it's not like making a salad. You know, a lot of people out there are like, well, what's it like to make beef jerky? Is it like make? No, it's not like making a salad. It's a 77-hour process. You start on a Tuesday, you finish on a Friday midday. Your house reeks of tender beef, spices, marinade. What have I been up to? Not much. Not much at all, folks. Quit my job as a janitor because I just couldn't do it anymore. I was cutting the grass one day, you know, because the grass never stops growing. And when you're a janitor and you have to mop up, you know, pee and take Capri Suns out of toilets every day, which is like a thing that this new generation likes to do. They like to suck down a Capri Sun Pacific cooler and just launch it in a urinal. Just see what happens. So then you pick it out. Then you go cut the grass. And the grass would grow. And then you go back in. You get in the Capri Sun of the toilet. It was the tedium of everyday life. It really made you feel like a cog in the machine, which I've tried to resist my entire life. So I quit. Now full-time bartender / trivia host. I said to my brother the other day, he goes, he said something along the lines of, you know, I got to go to work. I go, I don't really have a job. So I made my job up. And you can. You can do that. You just make one up. I made mine up. This town needed a trivia host, so I was like, I'll do it. What else happened to me? My girlfriend the other day sitting there, she says, hey, I need 3 stamps. And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck? Are we living in the 18 fucking hundreds here? You know, why don't you get a, while we're at it, I'll find you a pigeon of some sort that we could strap the letter to its leg and send it on its way. You know, that's what it feels like. A stamp feels like a pigeon now. Because there's email, there's Gmail, there's Yahoo. For those people who are still using Hotmail, there's Hotmail. But I mean, if you're not my sister in 1996, are you really using Hotmail right? You know? I remember one time she had a Hotmail account and her boyfriend broke up with her through a Hotmail account. Could you imagine today? No one would understand that. How did your first boyfriend break up with you? Ah, he Hotmailed me. He sent me a Hotmail. Then you're crushed. You're crushed and word got there by Hotmail. Imagine World War II, your husband's gone to war, sitting there in the ash-filled skies of Germany. He writes on a piece of parchment paper that he found in an old French bakery. In Germany, I know the narrative's getting a little distorted here, but, and he sends it from the foxhole, and it comes, and you could smell the war on the paper. Nowadays, it's just like, hey, babe, in Afghanistan, send feet pics, Hotmail. The world becomes less and less tactile, and because of it, we lose something of ourselves, I think. I worry about that. You know, I spend most of my time worrying about the zeitgeist. What will happen to the zeitgeist? What will happen to the letters that heralds in? What will happen to the ones that he collected, you know? Oh, you know what I did for a little while? I worked in a hotel bar. That made me think about it. Because I met a lady who met Howard Zinn, and she loves Sondheim. And we were talking one day. She's like, what are you doing talking about Howard Zinn and Sondheim and working in this weird hotel bar? And I said, you know, sometimes life doesn't go according to plan. That was my feelings towards her. I'll tell you about that, you know, as we continue to get back into poems. But we got this Henry Wadsworth Longfellow today. Not fellow. He's a fellow named Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Wadsworth. Guess when he's living. Guess when he's born. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Guess. That's right. 1807. When you were sitting around a kitchen table in 1807 and you're talking to your wife, there's no baby books. There's no books that suggest names for your newborn child. So the man might say something like, Henry. And the woman might say something like, you know, I've always liked the name Wadsworth. And you got to be like, well, honey, as much as you love Wadsworth, we can't name the kid Wadsworth. So you're like, we'll middle it. We'll middle the name. A lot of people have middle names that, like, someone's like, I like this name. And we'll just hide it in the name. No one will know. Like, my middle name's Willard, you know, for Christ's sake. That got snuck in there. I got a Wadsworth in the middle of my name. Willard's coming back, I'm sure. I mean, Christ, you know, a lot of them came back. Sophia. There's a lot of babies named Sophia now. Who was Sophia, you know, 20 years ago? But that woman on the Golden Girls with that sassy attitude. Not played by Bea Arthur. But Bea Arthur had sass, too. I'm Bea Arthur. That's my Bea Arthur impression. It's not good. I'll work on it. Can I do a Bea Arthur impression? We'll dwell on it some other time. All right, so let's pull up a chair, folks. Pull up a chair, light a match, and then light a small fire, because you're about to hear about one of the original fireside poets from New England, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He's an American poet and educator. His original works include poems Paul Revere's Ride, The Song of the Hiawatha, and Evangeline. He was the first American to completely translate the Divine Comedy and was one of the fireside poets from New England. As I've previously stated, he's born in Portland, District of Maine, Massachusetts, because at one time, Massachusetts was as big as my head. So where he was born in, and where it says it's, you know, Massachusetts, it's actually Maine. It's now Portland, Maine. I was there once. There's a Wegmans, you know, a big Wegmans. I think my friend makes bread in Portland, Maine. That would make sense. That would track with my life. Probably rides a bicycle to work, makes his bread in Portland, Maine. Portland, Maine's like Portland, Oregon, but on the East Coast. And, you know, so it's like Portland, Oregon, but someone might punch you in the jib, right? He graduates from college and becomes a professor, and later at Harvard College, he studies. He goes to Harvard after studying in Europe. His first major poetry collections were Voices of the Night and Ballads and Other Poems. So, you know, not really reaching for a title. He retired from teaching in 1854 to focus on his writing, and he lived the remainder of his life in the Revolutionary War headquarters of George Washington in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Because if you're going to retire, you know, fuck Boca Raton, because that doesn't exist yet, I don't think. But if I always say I'm going to retire to Cambridge, and when people say where, I go, the Revolutionary War headquarters of George Washington, please. His first wife, Mary Potter, dies in 1835 after a miscarriage. This is a long line of things that always happen with these poets. They have a first wife. They have coitus one evening, and then she dies a couple months later. His second wife, Frances Appleton, died in 1861 after sustaining burns when her dress caught on fire. This is what I'm talking about, people. This is what I've dwelled on for a long time. There can't be a purpose. There can't be that you can't be born to die because your dress catches on fire and you sustain burns. Either way, you know, Longfellow, he has some difficulty writing after his wife's dress catches on fire and she dies, which I would imagine, like, it ain't easy to just start writing poetry after that event. Wow. So then he just focuses on translating works from foreign languages, which is where the Dante's Inferno comes in. The Divine Comedy, I'm sorry. Longfellow dies in 1882. Longfellow wrote many lyric poems known for their musicality and often presenting stories of mythology and legend. He became the most popular American poet of his day and had success overseas. He has been criticized for imitating European styles and writing poetry that was too sentimental. Okay, critics of the 1800s, what is poetry if not a sentimental joust into the deeper feelings of man, right? Jesus, I don't even have a degree, and I know that. He's born in Portland, Maine, right? He grew up in what is now known as the Wadsworth Longfellow Estate. His father was a lawyer, and his maternal grandfather was Peleg Wadsworth. So that's where we're getting Wadsworth from. It's not the two people at the kitchen table. It's just his maternal grandfather, probably sitting there and go, you better put Wadsworth in his name. The Wadsworths built this country. We're building it now. Because he's a general in the American Revolutionary War and a member of Congress, this Peleg Wadsworth. Peleg? Well, I guess he could be Henry Peleg Longfellow, you know, but he goes with Wadsworth. Yeah, the grandfather was an American patriot officer during the American Revolutionary War and a congressman from Massachusetts representing the District of Maine. And he's the grandfather of noted poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So he's the fellow. He's in the war. He's in the war. His house later is declared a National Historical Landmark. So, good for him, right? Peleg. Peleg Wadsworth. P-League? P-Leg? I don't know. It can't be P-Leg. God, could you imagine? His mother was descended from Richard Warren, a passenger on the Mayflower. So this guy's white as white can be. He's the whitest boy in all of Matchuse, which becomes Maine. He was named after his mother's brother, Henry Wadsworth, a Navy lieutenant who had died 3 years earlier at the Battle of Tripoli. This family is stoked in history, you know? The uncle dies in the Battle of Tripoli. The grandfather, an American Revolutionary general. Member of Congress, people coming over on the Mayflower. My parents owned a beer deli in the 70s. And this guy's like a, wow. My grandmother's from a place called Nanticoke. Wild. Longfellow was descended from English colonists who settled New England in the early 1600s. So, Longfellow attended a dame school at the age of 3 and was enrolled by age 6 at private Portland Academy. In his years there, he earned a reputation as being very studious and became fluent in Latin. Of course he did. His mother encouraged his enthusiasm for reading and learning, introducing him to Robinson Crusoe and Don Quixote. He published his first poem in the Portland Gazette on November 17, 1820, a patriotic and historical four-stanza poem called The Battle of Lovell's Pond. This is what he does. He like kind of just writes about things that happened. He writes poems about like things. He mythologizes the country in a lot of ways, which is fun. He spent much of his summers as a child at his grandfather, I hope it's not Peleg's, farm in Maine. So he's living there, you know, he meets Nathaniel Hawthorne, who becomes a lifelong friend when he goes to college. And he boarded with a clergyman for a time before rooming on the third floor. In 1823 of what is now known as Winthrop Hall. He joins a society, as all these poets do, a group of students with Federalist leanings. And in his senior year, he writes to his father. Now, I once left a note for my father on the table. I think it said, like, took money for gas. And I wrote it on a Post-it note, and I left it on the table. That's the extent of, like, letter writing I've done with my father. Took money for gas, or, like, need lunch meat, you know, signed, Jake. Not even like love, no sincerity, or no sign off, just dash Jake. Need lunch meat, dash Jake. Longfellow writes this to his father. I will not disguise it in the least. The fact is I most eagerly aspire after future eminence in literature. My whole soul burns most ardently after it, and every earthly thought centers in it. I'm almost confident in believing that if I can ever rise in the world, it must be by the exercise of my talents in the wide field of literature. Need lunch meat, Jake. He pursued his literary goals by submitting poetry and prose to various newspapers and magazines, partly due to encouragement from Professor Thomas Cogsworth Upham. They're all Harry Potter characters, you know? Like, what the fuck? He published nearly 40 minor poems between January 1824 and his graduation in 1825. About 24 of them were published in the short-lived Boston periodical, the United States Literary Gazette. When Longfellow graduates college, he was ranked 4th in his class and had been elected Phi Beta Kappa. He gave the student commencement address. So it's just like, you know, people, it's the same as it is now. Then now. The world is circular. The world doesn't change. If you're a rich white guy whose father was a general and parents came over on the Mayflower, chances are you're going to get in a fraternity, you're going to be ranked high in your class, and you're probably going to give the commencement address because your parents built the library. After graduating in 1824, Longfellow was offered a job as professor of modern languages at his alma mater. A story claims that college trustee Benjamin Orr had been impressed by Longfellow's translation of Horace. Remember him? What a guy. And hired him under the condition that he travel to Europe to study French, Spanish, and Italian. So he does this. He goes to Europe. He has a little holiday in Europe. He begins to tour Europe in 1826 aboard the ship Cadmus. His time aboard lasted 3 years and cost his father $2,604.24. That's the equivalent of $67,000 today. This guy's fine. You know, I'm sure he's a great poet. We're going to get into his poetry and stuff. But this is just, this is a real American rich boy story. In Madrid, he spends time with Washington Irving and was particularly impressed by the author's work ethic. Irving encouraged the young Longfellow to pursue writing. While in Spain, Longfellow was saddened to learn that his favorite sister, Elizabeth, had died of tuberculosis at age of 20 that May. Sorry. Do you think that they do you think if you're a woman, it's just like you, it's tuberculosis, it's a miscarriage. I feel like the healthcare system in early America is the same as the healthcare system of today. Like a woman can't complain. A woman's pain isn't real, you know? I don't know. Whatever. He published a travel book, A Pilgrimage Beyond the Sea, in a serial form before a book edition was released in 1835. Then he marries Mary Storr Potter, a childhood friend from Portland. The couple settled in Brunswick, but the two were not happy there. Longfellow published several notifications in fiction and prose pieces in 1833, inspired by Irving, including The Indian Summer and The Bald Eagle. So this is just about the wife that catches on fire. Frances was putting locks of her children's hair into an envelope on July 9th, 1861, because there's nothing to do in 1861. So she's putting locks of her children's hair into an envelope and attempting to seal it with a hot sealing wax while Longfellow took a nap. Her dress suddenly caught fire, but it is unclear exactly how. Burning wax or a lighted candle may have fallen onto it. Longfellow was awakened from his nap and rushed to help her, throwing a rug over her, but it was too small. He stifled the flames with his body, but she was badly burned. Longfellow's daughter goes on to explain the story differently some 50 years later, claiming that there had been no candle or wax, but the fire had started from the self-lighting match that had fallen on the floor. Well, he tried. Longfellow was devastated by Francis's death and never fully recovered. He occasionally resorted to taking drugs and ether to deal with his grief. He worried that he would go insane, begging not to be sent to an asylum and noting that he was inwardly bleeding to death. Good God, when a poet loses someone. He expressed his grief in the sonnet The Cross of Snow when he wrote 18 letters to commemorate her death. Such is the cross I wear upon my breast these 18 years. Through all the changing scenes and seasons, changeless since the day she died. Longfellow supports abolitionism and especially hoped for reconciliation between the northern and southern states after the American Civil War. His son Charles was injured during the row, and he wrote the poem Christmas Bells later, the basis of the carol I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. He wrote in his journal in 1878, I have only one desire, and that is for harmony and a frank and honest understanding between North and South. Longfellow accepted an offer from Joshua Chamberlain to speak at his 50th reunion at the college. Despite his aversion to public speaking, Chamberlain, famous for fighting in Gettysburg, what's that, Devil's Den? He takes the hill. He holds the hill. I don't remember. I was in Gettysburg. I walked around with my friend Bob when we were like, I don't know, 30. My mom gave us money for the gift store. On August 22nd, 1879, a female admirer traveled to Longfellow's house in Cambridge and unaware to whom she was speaking, asked him, is this the house where Longfellow was born? He told her that it was not. The visitor then asked if he had died there. Not yet, he replied. In March 1882, Longfellow went to bed with severe stomach pain. He endured the pain for several days with the help of opium before he died, surrounded by family on Friday, March 24th. He had been suffering for a long time. At the time of his death, his estate was worth an estimated $356,320. He is buried with both of his wives at Mount Audubon Cemetery in Cambridge, Massachusetts. His last years were spent translating the poetry of Michelangelo. Longfellow never considered it complete enough to be published during his lifetime, but a posthumous edition was collected in 1883. Scholars generally regard the work as autobiographical, reflecting the translator as an aging artist facing his impending death. All right, what do we think? Let's go over to a Longfellow poem, and then we'll read a little bit of his legacy, and then we're out of here for the first What Are Poems episode in a very long time. So here's a Longfellow, as they say. Here is, let me find it here. Jeez, you know you lose things. You lose things. This is Paul Revere's Ride from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, if the British march by land or sea from the town to night, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm, for the country folk to be up and to arm. Then he said goodnight, and with a muffled oar, silently rowed to Charleston's shore. Just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her mooring lay, the Somerset British man of war, a phantom ship, with each mast and spar, across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend, through alley and street, wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet and the measured tread, I can't say it, of grandiers marching down, great grenadiers? You know what I'm saying, marching down to their boats on the shore. And then it just goes on for another, I don't know, it's like a book, Paul Revere's Last Ride. It's a rhymer, you know I don't really care for them, but it is nice that, you know, Paul Revere, really not the head of that whole thing, you know, other people were involved, and Paul Revere probably wouldn't be as remembered as he was if he wasn't so mythologized by old Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Over the years, Longfellow's personality has become part of his reputation. He has been presented as a gentle, placid, poetic soul, an image perpetrated by his brother Samuel Longfellow, who wrote an early biography which specifically emphasized these points. Longfellow had an absolute sweetness, simplicity, and modesty. At Longfellow's funeral, his friend Ralph Waldo Emerson called him a sweet and beautiful soul. In reality, his life was much more difficult than was assumed. He suffered from diseases which caused him constant pain, and he had poor eyesight. He wrote to a friend, Charles Sumner, I do not believe anyone can be perfectly well who has a brain and a heart. He had difficulty coping with the death of his second wife. Longfellow was very quiet, reserved, and private. In later years, he was known for being unsocial and avoided leaving home. Man, kind of sad, right? Like, even the rich, you know, what's that old Warren Zevon song? My shit's fucked up. The poor folk or the rich folks suffer like the rest of us. It'll happen to you. Oh, my shit's fucked up. Yeah, he's a Warren Zevon song, buddy boys. All right. Thank you for listening to What Are Poems. And until you remember here, folks, you can submit your own poems to the podcast at whatarepoemspodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, my friends, peace and love, beef jerky.